Senator John C. Stennis, Democrat of Mississippi, Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and member of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Here are the issues. Has Nasser's acceptance of America's peace proposals reduced the threat of war in the Middle East? Is the Soviet Union pulling ahead of the United States in the missile race? Was the Cambodian operation successful in shortening the Vietnam War? From Washington, D.C., the American Broadcasting Company brings you the award-winning interview program, Issues and Answers. Our guest, Senator John C. Stennis of Mississippi, Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, will be interviewed by ABC News Capitol Hill correspondent Bob Clark and ABC News Pentagon correspondent Roger Peterson.
Senator Stennis, the Middle Eastern situation has been heating up over the past few months. Now President Nasser of Egypt has accepted the U.S. peace proposal. Do you think this is going to take some of the pressure off there?
Well, yes, I think it will. For a time, yes. The big problem that I see in this Middle East matter now is keeping a balance of power between Israel and the Arab nations. I think that peace for the years ahead will have to rest largely on a balance of power while negotiations go on. And although I firmly believe that I know the United States does not want to get in a war, involved in a war there, and I don't believe Soviet Russia does. And I was greatly encouraged that Russia backed up Nasser, Egypt, in his acceptance of our proposal.
If there is a 90-day ceasefire, sir, do you think that both sides can be kept from improving positions?
Well, that's the big problem now. I think if there's any appreciable change, Russia's supply in Egypt, or if we should undertake to secretly supply Israel, which we're not going to do, I think it'd be detected for that long time, yes. But I don't think 90 days of negotiations will be enough to bring about any lasting results. But you have to make a start, and this is an encouraging start.
Well, Senator, would you want any guarantees that the Egyptians and the Russians would not continue their buildup of missile sites around Suez, for instance, around the Suez Canal during the 90-day period?
Well, I imagine for the 90-day period that would be agreed to, yes. Yes, it's really not a negotiation and a truce for 90 days unless we stop such as the missile construction there. And, of course, Israel will have to agree and to abide by terms, too.
Would you also want some sort of a freeze on the American supply of arms to Israel? Do you think that for 90 days we should postpone any supply of Phantom jets to Israel?
Well, no unilateral agreement to do so. I think so far the president has handled it all right. He's delayed giving these weapons, but I don't think he's delayed too long. But frankly, the whole that balance of power, which is the backlog that keeps back the war, I don't think it can wait much longer.
Do you believe, then, that we should be supplying Israel with those 25 more F-4 Phantoms?
No, I said that the holdback on it so far has been all right, as I see it. But it can't go on unless these talks show something favorable. Why, I wouldn't want it to go on much longer.
Well, you mean, then, that we're very soon, in your view, going to have to make a commitment to Israel to start supplying jet planes again?
Well, that's my idea. I haven't been advising the president on that. I think he's done rather well so far to hold back this far.
Do you think we should do anything to expel Russian pilots from the Middle East?
We are right in this thing now, and they've accepted our proposal, and we've got to make a reasonable effort. And the next move is, if Israel accepts this 90 days, why, the next move will be for us to make further suggestions.
along what lines, sir?
Well, it's to get down to the merits of these things, about the missiles, about what's going to be done about this strip. I think the Israel's entitled to some protection having that area strip there. But it'll take some kind of supervision, I think, by someone. It's a long-range proposition. I don't know who it would be, but perhaps we could work out something there.
Do you think that the Israelis should hang on to their occupied territories? Is that what
you're saying? Well, I don't say that. No, I'm not in position to go into unconditional assertions about this matter. I think they're entitled, under the circumstances, to some kind of protection. Their country, area is so small, their borders are exposed. They can't even take their army up in the mountains for summer training without leaving these areas exposed. And that's why they want this buffer zone. Very difficult matter, but the fact that we are in it, and Soviet Russia is in it, the negotiations, and I think there's some prospect of good coming out of it.
Well, Senator, do you see, as some people in Washington do, the danger of a great confrontation between the Soviet and the United States in the Middle East?
Well, it's possible. But I just don't believe that these two tremendous powers, with all the nuclear weapons we have, each side, I believe we have enough common sense on both sides to avoid being drawn into a conflict between us and on this issue.
Senator, the Middle East is only one spot where the U.S. and Soviet interests are colliding. The Soviets have been building up, according to the Defense Department, tremendously in missiles, building up their navy, improving other things. How do you see the positions now between the United States and the Soviet Union? Where does the arms race stand?
You're referring to nuclear weapons, strategic power. We are still appreciably ahead of them. I don't think there's any doubt about that now. But where we're going to be 6, 7, or 8 years from now depends upon what we do now, not then. So that's why we must go into these, take these new steps. And one of them, the defensive side of it, is the ABM. The other is the enlargement of the capacity of our intercontinental ballistic missiles, the MUIV, and then there are others. But now we have a lead that can well be lost at the rate they're going.
Well, Senator, as you note, we're still ahead in overall missile strength, but there are some top officers in the Pentagon, as you well know, I'm sure, that are very concerned about the great strides the Russians have made in the last 2 or 3 years, and they have moved ahead of us in total intercontinental ballistic missiles. They have moved ahead very rapidly. They haven't caught up yet, but in nuclear submarines. Are you concerned or alarmed about this?
Well, I think we ought to be concerned. I think this time for us to anticipate and keep ahead, but you certainly have to start early. This massive intercontinental ballistic missile, the big bomb, they call it the SS-9, it's a monstrous thing. And calculations are, with its tremendous power to destroy even our capacity, ICBMs, it just cannot be ignored.
The SS-9 being the Russian multi-headed missile.
Yes, that's right. With a, it makes a pygmy, just a firecracker out of the bomb it dropped over Hiroshima, in size and destruction and apparent accuracy.
Is the ABM going to be enough to counter the SS-9?
Well, it wouldn't be enough by itself. But it would be a shield, an armor of protection that, if we can perfect it to that extent, and I think we can, to give an assured protection for some of our weapons should we have to use them offensively. Our ICBMs with their improved, their MUIVs.
If we can take a short break here, we'll be back in just a moment with more issues.
Senator, you've started debate in the Senate on the Defense Appropriations Bill and on the ABM. Do you think that you're going to get the ABM system approved this time? You only passed it by one vote last year.
Yes, I think we shall get it approved in the Senate, and I base that upon two primary reasons. The first is, I think that it would just be a tragedy now, with these talks with Russia going on in Vienna, so-called SALT talks, where there may be some chance to get a limitation, not disarmament, of these huge weapons we've been talking about. I think it would be tragic and would defeat at this sitting all chance we might have to jerk the rug out from under the president now, the chief executive, by failing to pass this ABM in the Senate. Now, the ABM is a big item at that table, in my opinion. So another reason, that'll get right down to a senator's reasoning in the end, and that'll be decisive, I think, in the Senate. Another thing, this is just the second installment, after all, of what we approved last year and have started. And this is not an extensive program. The Senate left out, our committee at least, left out this scatter system, the added system. This is just another installment of what we did last year, and I think that's going to cause some change of votes.
Well, Senator, you leave out the preliminary acquisition of funds for study for the other sites, for the thin defense against possibly a Chinese attack, thinking that this was one way to get the bill through.
No. I think that the urgency of this additional system is not near as great. I just don't think it's urgent now. It may become so.
Senator, you're essentially making the administration argument that we have to go ahead with ABM as a negotiating weapon at the SALT talks in Vienna. But would it disturb you if we bargained away the ABM system, if we reached an agreement with the Russians and the agreement that has been, the possible agreement that has been talked about a great deal, is that we would fall back to a system where we would have an ABM system around Washington as the Russians have now a rather antiquated ABM system around Moscow. Would you approve the idea of stopping there?
Well, I wouldn't prejudge what may come out of that conference, if anything. But I think if we make any concessions on the ABM, that we will get some compensating returns for it. I'd have to be convinced, too, that we had this verification, the power, well, not inspection as that term is ordinarily used, but with modern ways of verifying matters, why a great deal can be done now. It couldn't be done years ago. But I'll have to be satisfied that we know whether or not they're keeping their promise, and they're entitled to know whether we're keeping ours.
Well, Senator, if ABM is really as critical to protecting our Minuteman missile sites as you and other ABM supporters argued last year, how can you then say that we can bargain it away in the SALT talks and forget all about an ABM system?
Well, I said armed limitation, and we might not entirely abandon ABM. We might have one for the command, it's said, in Washington, Moscow. But my point now is just to jerk the rug out and just abandon before we even try out these negotiations. It'd be a great mistake and kill off any chance to get agreements further, I think. Now, I'm about the ABM and the arguments in favor of it. This is divided opinion here, but most all the witnesses agree that in view of this immense big ICBM, the SS-9, it's called, that if that's continuing to grow, and it's growing rapidly, more than we thought a year ago, We must have an ABM system if possible. Everyone agrees to that. Now, not all, but many agree that this one we have is the best one there is in sight. Some say it won't work. And I respect all the scientists' view, but we have to make not just purely a scientific decision. We have to make a policy decision here. Shall we continue to try? And the Polaris, I've been here while Polaris was thought a dead issue. I mean, deadhead, no good. And Congress pushed it along, and it's successful. And I saw the debates over ICBM, the H-bomb, you know, great division of opinion there. Truman had to make the decision. So there's nothing perfect in these missiles or ABMs either.
Senator, yes. you talked about ABM, and it... The system hasn't even been fully tested yet.
No. Well,
how do you go about funding something that hasn't been fully
tested?
We decided
last year that in view of this added threat, and time has proven it more real than we thought then, that we'd have to move forward. There comes a time when part deployment, we call it, or making the actual production, becomes the last stages of this development process that they all have to go through. Well, I think we've taken about all the time we can to protect these, at least a few of our ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Do you think
that's what we're trying to do? No one guarantees it.
Do you see the Soviets moving towards a first strike capability with the SS-9?
Is that what they're doing? Here's the thing. Whatever their intentions may be, if they keep going with this, I believe it's 25 million tons of TNT is about the capacity of this SS-9, they'll have a first strike capability. Now, that's when you go to thinking about whether you use it or not, if you get it.
Senator, there's going to be another round of furious debate, apparently, on the Senate floor this next month over the military authorization bill, which will provide the springboard for a lot of talk about Vietnam and Cambodia. Could the funds that are in this $19 billion military authorization bill, could any of them be used for extended American military operations in Cambodia?
To this extent, it could. The bill is drawn now whereby this money can be used by the president for additional sanctuary attacks or any movement related to one after it started, and also anything to protect our own troops and any movement that he sees fit as commander-in-chief with reference to our present Vietnamization program, that is, scaling down the war. Now, there, in my interpretation of our wording, his authority would stop. They could still spend it now on Laotian in Laos and on Thai soldiers in Thailand, but so far as using it to send Thai soldiers on into Cambodia, I think this language is not broad enough. We had no plan that I've just alluded to before us, and that's a matter that if a plan is sent over and requested, properly guarded, well, I would doubtless support it. I mean, for in Cambodia, other troops. But so far as I can, I'm going to keep us from getting involved in Cambodia to where we have to support the government, a government, or guarantee the security of Cambodia. I just don't think we can do it.
Senator, if we can take another short pause here, we'll be back in just a moment with some final issues and answers.
Senator, we were discussing the Cambodian operations. There was considerable discord in Congress because members of Congress weren't consulted by the president before he went in. Did you talk to the president at all before the Cambodian operation?
I had no knowledge. I talked to the president about things along, but I had no knowledge of any invasion by our troops. I knew the sanctuaries. Things were going bad in Cambodia, and the sanctuaries were more troublesome. No, I have felt this way about Cambodia all the time, that we couldn't undertake the underwrite, guarantee that nation its integrity and protect it. It's gone.
Senator, were you told in advance that the administration was considering an operation to clean out the Cambodian sanctuaries?
Well, I wasn't told that any more than I was told any other thing. So,
but were you told?
I knew that the sanctuaries were in, you know, giving more and more trouble. I'm briefed by CIA and others.
You had been alerted to the fact that we might mount a military operation to clean out the
sanctuary. not USA. Mm-hmm. Not USA troops. No, not that. But that
the South Vietnamese might be used to clean out the sanctuaries.
Well, no, I wasn't told that. I was told that something might have to be done by more activity, bombing, and others. I've discussed that with several. But so far as this invasion and all that occurred, I wasn't told anything.
Senator,
about
do you
that,
think it's possible that the sanctuaries will have to be cleaned out again?
Well, I think it's entirely possible, yes.
By U.S. troops?
Well, I hope not, but yes, it could be. We can't. I think our Vietnamization program was in jeopardy when the president decided to go in there, and it could become so again. We are not out of South Vietnam by any means, and that's why I wanted this bill, Reid, give him that authority. The bill came from the House, said, use in Vietnam, and I said that wasn't broad enough, and that led to the broadening. We can't live with this matter of Vietnamization and withdrawal if we're going to let them use those sanctuaries as they had been in a big way, as I see it. That's
Senator,
why I favor them going back.
We want to talk to for a moment about school integration problems in the South. Have you been reassured by President Nixon's recent assurances that he's not going to send vigilantes into the South to enforce school desegregation this fall?
Well, he made that statement. He made a public statement, and I take that at his word. And he certainly, I'm very glad that he made that decision. But I say that in the interest of education. Our educational process is just literally being ruined in areas of the South already. And the people that are taking the lead, school trustees, teachers, and all, businessmen, others, taking the lead and trying to make this integration demand work, are just being kicked in the face by the federal government over and over. And to go now to run it like police state, it just is so much confusion. Well, these faculties can't adjust that fast.
You think the Nixon administration is using police state tactics to enforce?
Well, it would have been to put in these stations, and some of the agents are already virtually using police.
You mean agents?
Straight.
Agents of the Justice Department?
Well, no, I don't know of any. But the demands are such from HEW at levels. Why, it's equal to that. Now, another thing, this is presented to the nation over and over as being just a hardcore resistance in the South. Why, that's misleading. This massive segregation of students outside the South is continuing and increasing, and nothing's done about it. Indiana had a law permitting a separation of schools in practice until 49, and nothing has been done.
Wouldn't you agree?
Gary, Indiana has 47% of its school children, black children now, in school that are 95 to 100% black.
But wouldn't you agree, Senator, that this de facto segregation in the North is much more difficult to deal with than the segregation by law you've had in the South?
Virtually nothing is being done. New York State has even passed a law guaranteeing, prohibiting busing and giving freedom of choice to the parents. The federal government hadn't even brought an act to try to declare it invalid. I have the figures here showing in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Chicago, Boston, and other places that their schools are becoming more and more segregated, black isolation, going up 2 to 3 to 4% per year in those cities, and nothing's being done to stop it.
Senator, I'm
still this total massive demand for us now. Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'm very sorry to have to cut you off here, Senator, but we have run out of time. It's been a great pleasure having you with us on Issues and Answers.